The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter number 2, texts number 4, 6, 7, and 8, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasatkikari, recorded on June 6, 2008, in Sydney, Australia.
So today we will be chanting and discussing Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter number 2. Texts 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Maitreya Uvacha Pura Vishvasrajam Satre Samita Paramarishaya Tathamaraganas sarve Sanuga Munayognaya. The sage Maitreya said, in a former time, the leaders of the universal creation performed a great sacrifice in which all the great sages, philosophers, demigods, and fire gods assembled with their followers. Text 5. Tatra pravishtam nishayo visvarakam eva rochisa rajamanang viti mirang kurvantang tan mahatsada. When Daksha, the leader of the Prajapatis, entered that assembly, his personal bodily luster as bright as the brilliance, as the effulgence of the sun, the entire assembly was illuminated, and all the assembled personalities became insignificant in his presence. Udatishtan sadasyaste svadishnebhya sahagniyah rite virinchang sarabhangcha tadbhashak chipta chetasa. Influenced by his personal bodily luster, all the fire gods and other participants in that great assembly, with the exceptions of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, gave up their own sitting places and stood in respect for Daksha. Sadasas Patibir Daksho Bhagavan Sadhu Satkrita Ajang Loko Gurum Natva Nishasada Tad Agyaya. Daksha was adequately reckoned with the president of the great assembly, Lord Brahma. After Lord Brahma respect, Daksha, by the order of Brahma, properly took his seat. Pran nishayan mridang drishtva nam srishat tad anadataha uvacha vamang chukshur bhyam avibhiksha dahanniva. Before taking his seat, however, Daksha was very much offended to see Lord Shiva sitting and not showing him any respect. At that time, Daksha became greatly angry and his eyes glowing. He began to speak very strongly against Lord Shiva. Purport. Lord Shiva, being the son-in-law of Daksha, was expected to show his father-in-law respect by standing with the others. But because Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are the principal demigods, their positions are greater than Daksha's. Daksha, however, could not tolerate this, and he took it as an insult by his son-in-law. Previously, also, he was not very much satisfied with Lord Shiva, for Lord Shiva looked very poor and was niggardly in dress. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Pada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sahagana Raghunathan Vita Dam Sajiva Sadaita Samadhuta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha. What is the first defense against the chanting of the holy name? To blaspheme the devotees. So we can just imagine what a heavy thing has just happened. Lord Shiva is called Param Vaishnav. He is the greatest Vaishnav. He is also listed as one of the 12 great Mahajans. Swayambhur Nadada Shambhu. Shambhu, that is Lord Shiva. He's listed in the 12 Mahajans. He's great Vaishnav. To directly, intentionally offend Lord Shiva, you can imagine what a heavy, heavy aparad. On what basis is he committing this? On the basis of bodily consciousness. You are my son-in-law. Why are you not respecting me? I am your father-in-law. You see, this is bodily consciousness. Therefore, the first principle on the pathway of bhakti is I'm not this body. You see? If you demand respect on the basis of your body, that is an illusion. You see? It's an illusion. So Daksha, he's trying to demand respect, you see. There are two things, demanding and commanding. If you command respect, that means by your ideal behavior, people naturally respect you. The actual pure devotee, he never demands respect. Rather, he likes to give respect. That is his great joy. He loves to give respect. Even the little ant, he loves to respect even the little ant. You see? So the pure devotee, he is very respectable because he's always giving respect. Actually, we naturally want to respect a pure devotee because of his qualities. Wherever Prabhupada went, he was greatly respected. Not because someone, just ordinary people would see him and they would respect him. Not that, oh, here is the Jagad Guru, the spiritual master of the universe, so therefore according to scripture we have to respect him. No. He was taking an early morning walk one time in Brooklyn, New York, and kind of a rough neighborhood, you know, winos sleeping in the gutter, you know. So three of these derelict winos, two or three of them, they were lying there all slouched out, but they saw Prabhupada coming. And as soon as when Prabhupada came out, they all stood at attention. It's like a soldier coming to attention. They all stood up to respect Prabhupada. They had no idea who he was. They didn't know what Hare Krishna was. They didn't know anything. All they could see was this person. And immediately they wanted to respect him. Even though they were the so low class, derelict people sleeping in the street, you see. So, the pure devotees, they don't go around demanding, oh, you have to respect me. No. Rather, they give respect to everyone. Why? Because they see how Krishna is in the heart. They see this person is part and parcel of my beloved Krishna. This person is very dear to Krishna. Therefore, I love and respect this person because they are very dear to Krishna and Krishna is within their heart. So in this way, the pure devotees command respect wherever they go. Just like on one airplane, right, Prabhupada, the pilot, he came out of the cabin and came down and sat with Prabhupada to inquire from him. He wasn't an Indian, just an American pilot. But he could see here's a great spiritual personality. Let me take advantage. Let the co-pilot take charge of the plane. I'm going to go and sit down with this great spiritual leader. So he sat, there's a photograph of this pilot sitting there on the airplane talking with Prabhupada while it's flying through the sky. So this is the wonderful quality of the pure devotees, you see. They just want to give respect to everyone. And therefore, we love such persons. Someone who, you see, if someone loves us, aren't we inclined to love them? If somebody hates us, it's much harder to love them, you see. But if someone has very strong loving feelings for you, and they show that by the way they deal with you, doesn't that inspire you to love them, you see? So this is what the pure devotee does, you see. He truly loves all living entities, seeing them as his beloved brothers and sisters, parts and parcels of God. Therefore, he doesn't eat meat, you see. He sees all living entities as his beloved family members, and he offers them all respect. So therefore, when we see such a great personality who has pure love, for all living beings. When we see such a great personality, we naturally want to love that person. So this was our experience with Srila Prabhupada. By seeing Srila Prabhupada on this planet, you see. Being a part of his pastime. And doing service. Everyone wanted to serve him. Just imagine being surrounded by 300 people who all want to serve you. If you could do even a little thing for Prabhupada, it was a big deal. Oh, wow, I got to open the door for Prabhupada when he got out of his car. And I either opened it or shut it. I forget what it was. I think I closed the door, yeah. Maybe I did open it. I forget which it was. I got to either open or close the door for him at New Vrindavan one time. I mean, because someone who has so much love, you see, he's like a volcanic eruption of love, just spewing love in all directions, you know, wherever he goes. Just all this prema just emanating from his body, you know. When you were in Prabhupada's contact, you just get this prema lava would just inundate you, you see. If you were even slightly tuned in to who was this great personality, you see. And just being in his presence, it was just like sitting in a volcano of prema lava, you know, showering all over you, inundating you. So, such personalities are very rare. Such great pure devotees as Srila Prabhupada, they're very, very rare. And Lord Shiva is also such a great, great, great pure devotee. So for Daksha to intentionally make offensive statements against this great personality, you can just imagine what kind of heavy reaction is coming. And it, as you'll see as you continue through this chapter, it was unbelievable what happened. It was just, you know, it makes 9-1-1 look like a Sunday school picnic. It was incredible what happened at that yagya. I mean, it was completely decimated. Just as a ghastly murder scene. You know, people's heads cut off. I mean, it was just horrible. All because Daksha committed this offense. So, this should give us lesson that we have to be very careful not to commit Vaishnava Aparadha. We see this is a problem in ISKCON. I mean, I travel all over the world. I see many temples. There's some places where, I mean, here it's a very nice cooperation mood, but there's some places where there's so much fighting going on amongst the devotees. They don't have the realization of properly respecting Vaishnavas. You see, sometimes we disagree with each other. I mean, that's natural. You know, you have your personality, I have mine. Sometimes we'll disagree. You see, devotees do disagree sometimes, but we have to see that they're both agreeing to serve Krishna. I'm thinking the deity should be dressed in pink, and you're thinking he should be dressed in blue, you know. And we're going to have a big fight in the Bajari room, you know. And, you know, pull out the six shooters and duel it out in the Bajari room. No, he should be wearing pink. No, he should be wearing blue. How stupid that would be. You see. Because both of us want to serve Krishna. So anytime there are disagreements between devotees, we should know they're not very important. Because we're all agreeing to serve Krishna. We're all agreeing to serve Srila Prabhupada. So why make a big deal about the differences? They're much less important. They're not very significant. The significant thing is we're all agreeing to serve Krishna. So we can always remember this, even if we disagree with the devotee sometimes, we won't get hot-headed over the issue. We won't become angry. We can be tolerant. Think, well, he's a great soul. He wants to serve Krishna. Even though it's not the way I think we should serve Krishna, still he wants to serve Krishna. So in this way we can avoid falling into this trap, the daksha syndrome. We want to avoid the daksha syndrome like anything, because it will kill us spiritually. I mean, you can go along, just be completely enlivened, you know, blissful in your service, then you get angry at some devotee and you just lose everything, you know, all your enthusiasm, all the nectar. Now, instead of tasting nectar, you're drinking poison. It's just because of Vaishnava Parada. So I remember in a class in Vrindavan, the devotee was saying, we must avoid Vaishnava Parada. And I was thinking, yes, but that's saying it in a negative way. Don't do this. Don't offend Vaishnavas. Whatever you do not offend a Vaishnava. Okay, but what am I supposed to do then? I have to do something at every minute. Every minute I have to think something, I have to speak something, and I have to do something. It's the nature of being a living being. You're always thinking, doing something, and speaking also sometimes. So how do I... What's the secret of how to avoid Vaishnava Parama? So the positive way is always give respect to devotees, you see. That's the positive side of it. If you always give respect to devotees, then you never disrespect them. So if you want to know the secret how to never, ever, 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 ever offend a Vaishnava, always be giving respect to the Vaishnavas. Not only within your words and your actions, but in your mind also. Because if we think disrespectfully towards Vaishnavas, sooner or later it's going to come out, it's going to pop out. So the key is, let's say there's some devotee you had a disagreement with, and you felt you were unfairly treated, this and that. So what do you do with those thoughts? You have to think, yes, but he's really dedicated to his spiritual master. He's really dedicated to Krishna. He gives wonderful classes. He leads the sweetest, most enlivened kirtans. He has to think all of the good things, you see. Even if there's a disagreement. Cultivate the good thoughts about that person. And if you're always thinking, because you may remember, he did something you know for sure it was wrong. I mean, it's against Prabhupada's books. You know for sure it was wrong what he did. But you think, yes, but he did something wrong and we shouldn't. Those things shouldn't be done, but this is good about him. So in this way, we can avoid committing Vaishnava Parama by always finding the wonderful, always appreciating the wonderful qualities of the devotees. And here's one of the insider secrets in this connection. Whatever you meditate on is what you become. If I'm thinking this devotee has that fault, and this devotee has that fault, and this fault, that fault, 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 my mind is going on fault, 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 then what do I become? I become honeycomb with faults myself. A beehive just full of faults, you see. If all I'm thinking about, this devotee has that fault, and that devotee shouldn't have done this, and this devotee shouldn't have done that, then that means all I'm thinking about is faults. And that means that my faults will then become very predominant, very prominent. Because my mentality is prominently a fault-finding mentality. Therefore, my nature will become, I will manifest, my faulty qualities will come to the forefront, become predominant. But if I'm always thinking, this devotee has that good quality, and this devotee has that good, that devotee has this good quality, this devotee has that good quality, in this way, thinking about all the wonderful, wonderful qualities of the devotees, every one of them, you see. Yeah, you have this wonderful quality, and you have this wonderful quality, and every one of you, I see a wonderful quality in each and every one of you, you see. Then what will that meditation do when I'm looking at all of your good qualities? That way I inherit, I become whatever good quality I'm appreciating in you, that good quality expands itself into my heart. And I also develop that good quality. You see, just by thinking that you have that good quality, then that good quality comes to me also. I inherit those good qualities that I meditate in the Vaishnavas. So this is a very easy way to become full of all wonderful good quality. Just always see the good qualities in the devotees. Always be appreciating their good qualities. And then you'll be amazed at how all your nartha just start evaporating, and you become completely enlivened in pure bhakti gradually, gradually. It becomes more and more manifest as we stay on this path of appreciating Vaishnavas. Now, when somebody corrects you, what would you say? Oh, Prabhu, you're not supposed to find any fault with me because you're always supposed to appreciate devotees. No. If someone is our true well-wisher and they want to help us advance in Krishna consciousness, they will naturally point out our faults to us, you see, out of love. There's a difference. If someone is envious, fault-finding mood, and they point out your faults, that is not very potent. But if someone who is your genuine, well-wishing friend, who really loves you, who really cares about you, who wants to see you become more happy and more successful in your practice of Krishna consciousness, if that sort of a person points out our faults, then we should associate with them constantly. Because those people, those kind of devotees, you see, advanced devotees who are sincerely trying to help us by honestly telling us what's wrong with us, you see, those kind of devotees, they're the best association we can get. So in this way, if we understand and apply these principles of bhakti yoga, then we will become very nicely situated on this pathway, back to home, back to Godhead. So I can ask if there's any questions. Yeah, you need to speak loud because you're competing with that humming sound in my bad hearing.
Daksha actually offended Shiva because you said Shiva is one of the 12 Mahajans, and he offended, and because of that it's a big Vaishnava war. Even in the war of Kurukshetra, Arjuna actually fought with Bhishma. Bhishma is also a Mahajan. Isn't that a Vaishnava war?
Was Daksha ordered by Krishna to offend Shiva? When you act on the order of Krishna, whatever you do is perfect. Even if it, under ordinary circumstances, you would never do such a thing. When it is done on the direct order of Krishna, then it is perfect. That's the difference.
Later on, Daksha got a goat's head. Daksha got a goat's head later on. His head was chopped off and he got a goat's head.
Yes.
So what happened to him in the future? Does he stay forever in the...
And the goat head?
With the goat's head?
Well, we know that everyone eventually goes back to the spiritual world and they get their original form that they had before they entered the material world. So, according to that logic, that would not be an eternal position for him. According to that logic. Eventually he'll go back to going back to Godhead and get his original swaroop. So, I don't have any scriptural reference, but the common sense would be that when he achieves his sarup, he would not have gone in.
But for the rest of that life, he stayed like that?
Is there any description that it was switched back? I've never heard such description. So, logic tells that since we have no description, it was switched back, and most likely he continued like them. That's his tapasya for his append. You see. That's his purification for his append. Someone could say, in fact that was Daksha's argument, that because he is my son-in-law, therefore he is obliged to show me respect as father-in-law. But when there is a person, when a great Mahajana on the level of Lord Shiva, you have to leave it up to him what's right and what's wrong. You see, Daksha should have understood, Shiva could have done that. He could have acted. Krishna also acted in terms of family relationships, even though he didn't have to. So Shiva could have done that. But if Daksha thinks Shiva is obliged to do that, then that's a great offense. It wouldn't have been wrong if Shiva had done that. But it wasn't wrong that he didn't do that also. Such a great personality, their liberated soul. They can act according, however they act, that's their mercy. So that was the mercy of Shiva that he did not offer respect. Did he know? One could study this chapter in great detail. It may come out in Prabhupada's purports. But knowingly or unknowingly, it doesn't make any difference. He knew them.
Yeah.
It was common knowledge. All the demigods, everyone knew the position of Brahma and Shiva's positions were quite well known. They didn't think he was just some ordinary. Everyone knows he's a great personality. So Daksha also should have known that. Actually, he must have known that. But he's thinking out of pride, he's thinking, I'm the father-in-law. Even though it was common knowledge that Shiva and Brahma were great personalities, great exalted personalities, his pride completely deprived him of common sense. So pride can do that. One becomes too puffed up, then you can lose all good sense. Even common sense you don't have anymore. Therefore, trinadapi sanichena, once you become very humble. Because as soon as you become pride, pride cometh before the fall. Don't become proud, like daksha. Yes? Do you understand the question, Devi?
Yes, you
gave
the example of the pujaris.
Right.
So the two pujaris may fight over what they should be wearing. So
right.
I know that for the particular occasion, blue is better than the pink.
Right.
Then how do you decide?
So, whatever is prescribed by the there is some system set up, so one should follow that system. And that ends all the fights.
There's maybe, there's, black and white devotion. Huh? It's not always black and white devotion, so it's maybe in the pujari room, but I'm just using that as an example. But there's so many circumstances where you might be thinking, well, I have a material qualification, and I know this is the better way, you know, to do it, and somebody else might be doing it.
We have an authority structure in our movement. In terms of, we have an organization, although sometimes you wouldn't think so, but we have an organization here, and you can always, you know, in terms of what should be done within this organization, then you can always, there's an authority you can always go to if there's some disagreement between two people, and ask the authority to decide what should be done. Just like in Australia, you have a court system, you have subordinate court, Supreme Court. There's always some authority, there's an authority, an organizational structure you can plug into to resolve these things. We have temple presidents, we have GBCs, we have the GBC body, we have our own spiritual masters, individual devotees. So if you plug into the system and follow the guidelines from your superiors, then all conflicts will come to an end. Prabhupada personally trained me to do whatever the temple authorities say without question. He also told us, do not fight amongst yourselves. So if there's any disagreement and it can't be resolved and worked out, you go to the higher authority and let them decide what should be done. And then there'll be complete peace and cooperative spirit, loving dealings. His hand was up. But I saw you speaking. So I saw you first. Go ahead. He's yelling to you anyway. Okay. She's yielding to you now.
Just to change the subject, you were trained through Bishop John Swami in the early days. Did you have any association with Vishajan Swami and Tamal Krishnaraj on the bus, on the round them on the bus party? Did you travel with them on the round them on the bus party?
I was one of the charter members of the Radharamana Traveling Sankirtan Party, but Tamal Krishna Maharaj came later on. He was still in India, and the Radharamana Traveling Sankirtan Party started. Vishnijan Maharaj came to Austin in 71, opened a preaching. There was no Radharamana Party in those days. He had been ordered to open 10 temples because he was implicated with some offense against Prabhupada that four sannyasis had done by preaching Mayavadi philosophy. So Prabhupada rectified them by giving them an order to stay away from the ISKCON temples, go out away from ISKCON temples and open 10 centers each sannyasi. So of course Prabhupada let them come back before they opened all 10, but they had to go out and open 10 centers, and Vishnujan Maharaj had opened 2, Houston and Austin. So that was 71, and then in 72 Kirtananda Swami had this traveling roadshow. It was a rock opera. And he invited Vishnajan Maharaj to join, and then Vishnajan Maharaj joined, and then Kirtananda Maharaj went back to New Vrindavan, and now Vishnajan Maharaj was in charge of this traveling roadshow. So I was with him in Austin, and then I joined him also in the traveling roadshow. And then Prabhupada wanted that to stop. There was some fighting amongst the devotees who would control the thing, and Prabhupada stopped it. And at that time, he took the bus that he had. Actually, the roadshow broke into two factions. Vishnujan split off, and I went with him. We were going to start a second roadshow. And the New York Temple wanted to control the original. It was a whole thing, you know, quarreling between devotees. Prabhupada just stopped the whole thing at that point. So I was with what was going to be the second roadshow, but then when Prabhupada said no, then he said, okay, now this is the Radha Ramana Traveling Sankirtan Party. So we had one bus, and we were in Florida. And then he was just doing this one bus thing. And then Tamal Krishnamurti heard about this, traveling around the bus with Radha Damodar. And he had a vision of expanding it, you know, like in, you know, his brain, you know. So then he came, and help was needed in Florida, so Vishnajan Maharaj gave me to the Miami Temple. In those days, he was just like a soldier, you know. Your authority could just say, okay, now, you're just like a soldier in the military in the old days. There was no independence. Householders had that. Brahmacharis were just like soldiers in the military. I was traveling with Vishnajan Maharaj in complete bliss. And he said, okay, now you stay. We pulled into Miami a few days. He said, now you stay here. That was it. My authority ordered me to stay in Miami, and there I was. So I had great respect for him, so he ordered me to stay there, so I surrendered to his order. That way I served him in separation. And then after maybe a year or so later, I don't know the chronology, but then Tamal Krishnamurti came and teamed up, and then they expanded it like crazy.
Did you join again after that?
Hmm?
Did you join the Radha Damodar
Party? No, I was very addicted to... I stayed in Florida, actually. I was sent to Gainesville to Amarendra Prabhu. Opened a had been part of the original Gainesville Center, and then it had shut down during the centralization era. That's a whole other story. And he wanted to reopen it, so he took his wife there, and then I was sent to join them. So the three of us in the must have been the fall of 73. Yeah, the three of us were in a little tiny apartment in Gainesville. And we took that. Within a year, we had a meeting. We had bought a sorority house and had it filled up with devotees. It was amazing. So I stayed in. I stayed in Florida preaching. The Radha Damodar Party then used our Gainesville temple as a base. They would bring the buses there and do the. We had a big, huge backyard, so they would do the. They brought the buses to our center and then rebuilt them for the road. Took a regular old bus, you know, took all the seats out. That was all done in Gainesville. So I had the association of Tamal Krishnamurti and Vishnu Maharaj in Gainesville. And there's some famous pastimes in Gainesville. The contest between the Gainesville devotees and the Radha Damodar devotees. Who could eat the most prasadam? Of course, Amarendra wanted me to compete on the Gainesville team, and I went and hid. I didn't feel like throwing up, you know. They were eating so much that you would get sick. So I hid during that contest. So yeah, I had that. They would come through Gainesville. So in that way, I would associate with them. And I had the opportunity to join them, but I really had a good program on the campus. I was the person We have the longest standing Food for Life program in the history of ISKCON happening at the University of Florida in Gainesville. And I was the one who first went out and started doing it. For 3 years, I went out.
Still going.
Still going on. I started it, must have been the fall of 73. And it's been going on ever since. I started off just with a bowl of Simplies and a harmonium. And I would sit out there on the campus. This is the place where Prabhupada gave a lecture, the Plaza of the Americas, the Holy Tirtha. Prabhupada came there and gave a lecture one time also, about 72. So I went out every day with a harmonium, a bowl of Simplies, and gradually we started bringing out a whole lunch, and we made so many devotees, and I was really addicted to that preaching on the Plaza of the Americas. That was the time everybody was doing books, so, you know, book distribution was the big push. So Amarendra was thinking, maybe we should stop this Plaza Prasadam program, and he asked Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, no, you should keep it going, because he said, if you keep feeding them prasadam, they'll become devotees. So instead of being sent out on book distribution like everybody else, I was sent out to the campus every day with the prasadam distribution. So I was making the devotees, feeding the students prasadam, making the devotees, and they would go out and distribute books. So in that way, I was distributing books by making book distributors. And then they would come through. The Radha Damodar Party would come through, and it was just amazing. I remember they did a whole program there on the same spot where I was doing a Vishadam distribution. They set up, they brought Radha Damodar, Vishnujan Maharaj came there with Radha Damodar, and it was absolutely amazing. I would call it spellbinding. Vishnujan would put the deities right there on the campus, and he would sing to the deities. And just the way he would sing, people would be mystified. And I even met somebody. I went to the grocery store for, you know, buy some boga. I used to shop for the deities, you know. And I met some student. He said, he was telling me the experience he had walking by Vishnujan Maharaj on the campus, how he was completely mystified by it, seeing it and hearing it. Yeah, it was really amazing. Vishnujan Maharaj was the, he was the bait. And then Tamal was Krishna Goswami. He would capture them. Yeah, Vishnujan Maharaj was the web that would capture them, and then Tamal Krishna Maharaj was the spider who would then finish them off. They were really an amazing team to see Vishnujan Maharaj and Tamal Krishna Maharaj acting. They were really, really, they really had it together. They perfectly orchestrated, you know. People just become completely amazed by Vishnujan's singing and his preaching, and then Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he would grab them and capture them. They couldn't leave. You know, he would preach so strongly and powerfully. They couldn't go anywhere. So yeah, I was seeing Vishnujan, still getting his association from time to time. But I was addicted. I had my own project now. I had my own thing. Instead of just being a, you know, I was the big, I get to have my own project, you know, my own thing. It was really, I was really attached to that program. I was so attached. One day we had no vehicle. The vehicle was broken down. So I just grabbed a wheelbarrow and put the prasadam in the wheelbarrow and wheeled across town to the campus with the prasadam in a wheelbarrow. So I was really addicted to the pre-college preaching program. So in that way, I could have gone with the bus, but I decided to stay there because I really had a really nectarian preaching program going on that campus. And then one point, you know, I was in the military. At one point, Amarendra said, okay, now you're going to Atlanta. And there they engaged me in campus and college preaching and giving lectures in the classroom. It was really nice. But the somehow or other, because I had been so attached to that, I had been the integral person there on the college preaching. There was a whole heavy thing with the campus officials. They wanted to shut down the prasadam program, get rid of these Hare Krishnas, get them out of here, you know, this cult. They wanted to get rid of us. So what they did is they came, they took some of the prasadam and they took it to the laboratory, the medical laboratory, and they said, oh, this is unfit for human consumption. So they wanted to ban the prasadam program on health reasons. Now, our temple president, Amarendra, he was formerly one of the big anti-war organizers. There were seven big organizers that did huge political anti-establishment organizers in Gainesville. They were famous, actually. There was some, I think there was a trial even, the Gainesville Seven. I mean, it was a big thing. So Amarendra was formerly a big, big man on the campus. And so he knew how to do protest against the government. He was really good at it. He really knew how to do it. So when the government said, the campus authority said, no more prasadam distribution, he sent the devotees out anyway in defiance of the Qazi's order, you see. And then the police came with the squad cars, and the devotees wouldn't get up. They refused to get up. They did completely nonviolent, non-cooperation with the police. So devotees put the police put the devotees in handcuffs, and they had to drag them across the campus to the squad cars, physically drag them. So this was all witnessed by hundreds of students who were being fed by the devotees and professors, and they were booing the police. It was a big thing, in the campus newspaper. So I was in Atlanta at the time, because I somehow the devotees gave me the special mercy. They said, here, forward these to Prabhupada. So all these photographs and all this stuff was sent by the devotees to me, and they asked me to send it on to Srila Prabhupada. So guess what? Amarendra fought it in the court, and we won. And those rascals had to back down, and we've been there ever since, distributing prasadam. So it just goes to show, we have to be determined fighters. Never let them stop us from our preaching. If they beat us in one way, we'll come in from another way. We have to be very, very determined to take over the world for Papa. So now we're so much of an institution on that campus, there's no thought of even getting rid of us. I mean, we've been there for 30 years doing, 30 plus years, but 73, oh my God, that's 35 years we've been there. Shivering Vishadam every day. Yeah.
Did the devotees actually have permission to distribute Vishadam there?
They had certainly, if they're there for 35 years, I don't know what the legal thing they have, but certainly they've been there for 35 years. And they have some, I don't know legally what they have some thing on paper, I don't know what it is, but they're going there for 35 years. And now the students actually pay something. They have hundreds of students lining up every day, paying a minimum fee and getting lunch. It's a big program. And even to this very day, there's stories of devotees, Sankirtan devotees out in some van somewhere sleeping in a parking lot, and the police come. And then they find out it's the Hare Krishna people. And the police, when they were students at the university, they got prasadam. So there's many stories of people who got prasadam on that campus. The policeman, and then he had all the policemen buy a book. All the officers had to buy a book when he found out it was the Hare Krishna people. And there was another time, there was some talk show in New York City, a radio. You know how some of these radio talk shows, the host can be like really cutting, trying to make you look like a complete idiot, defeat you. There's one of these heavy-duty sort of talk shows in New York City, and the devotees are invited on it, and the devotees are thinking, boy, this guy's really going to grill me and really try to make me look bad. I have to really depend on Krishna. And he went there, and the guy was so sweet and friendly, he couldn't believe it, because every other person that comes on that talk show, the guy just finds every fault he can to make them look bad, But he was so sweet, and then he said, I used to get prasadam from you guys on the University of Florida campus. So it's really been a very successful program in terms of, goodwill with the human society. They'll become devotees. Within their heart, they can never forget when I was a student, those Hare Krishnas fed me. And you know something? You've heard of Stephen Jobs' Apple computer? When he was a hippie in San Francisco, he told this story one time. You can look on the internet. He gives the lecture. at a graduation lecture at a university campus. He told thousands of people in this lecture that when I was a hippie in San Francisco, I used to get one good meal a week by walking across town and going to the Hare Krishna temple. Steven Jobs, the founder of Apple Computers, the one whose invention actually has revolutionized the world, he got prasadam every Sunday. That was his one decent meal a week at the Hare Krishna temple. So this prasadam distribution is a wonderful, wonderful thing, along with our book distribution and Harinam and deity worship and, you know, Bhakti Vriksha programs and Bhakti Shastri classes. We have a wonderful program that Prabhupada has given us. Yes?
In the early days in Australia, in Brisbane, the devotees were doing books on the street, and they were like so fired up, they were selling so many books, and they had to keep going back to the van to get more boxes. And the police came along and said, "What are you doing?" And the devotees said, "No, we're selling these spiritual books on the order of our spiritual master." And the police said, "Oh, can we help you?" So the police volunteered to help, drive the devotees back to the van to pick up more boxes, and then drive the boxes back and help them undo the boxes.
That's very nice.
But later, in later years, they harassed us.
Huh?
But in later years, they were like harassing the devotees.
Yeah, there may have been different officers. Yeah. Yeah, eventually everyone will become cooperative. But if we keep preaching, that day will come and everyone will cooperate with us. All the government leaders, you see, they'll be wearing tilak, the high court judges. They said to keep distributing these books and keep chanting and keep preaching and making devotees, and the whole world will eventually become Krishna conscious. That's a fact. All right. It's now 9 o'clock. We'll stop here, and we thank you all very much. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
His Grace Sankarsan Bhagavatam.